the McDonald's Funky Trail Ball Podcast, presented by McDonald's of Jackson, Wellston, Oak Hill, and now proudly in MacArthur. McDonald's and Viking basketball. I'm loving it. The Viking Realm Ball Podcast with head coach Matt Coles is your weekly look inside Vinton County Vikings basketball. Stand by for recaps and previews of all of this week's Viking action, plus scores, stats, guest interviews, and more. Now broadcasting across the world wide web.
From a padded room in his basement.
Alongside the head coach of the Vikings, Matt Coles, here's your host, Carl Knox.
And welcome to another exciting broadcast extravaganza. It's episode number 50 of the Viking Roundball Podcast. Alongside the head coach of the Vinton County Boys Vikings, Matt Coles. My name's Carl Knox. Wherever in the world you are, whatever you're doing, we certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to get caught up on everything that is Viking Boys basketball. The podcast presented by McDonald's, McDonald's and MacArthur, Jackson, Wellston and MacArthur. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. McDonald's, I'm loving it. You know what episode this is, Coach?
50.
50.
That's why I figured you'd have like a big spread in here. Like, you know how the NFL, they paint their yard lines the gold, you know, the 50, the gold. Nothing, man. 50th show.
As usual, you are wrong. It's golden anniversary, you know.
Yeah.
So you didn't get me a present? There's no card, flowers?
Well, you ruined it now.
Sweet nothings. Yeah. Box of chocolates?
Yes.
I hate box of chocolates because you never know what you're going to get.
That's true.
Yep, episode 50. How you doing?
All right.
You back on the healthy path? I know you spent the better part of the weekend post the Vinton County Viking victory over Washington Courthouse with a bit of a throat ache.
Oh, yeah. I had strep throat there. Had to get through that. But now I'm doing well now.
Okay, yeah. So there's no excitement, really. No post-game party.
No, post-game was get home and basically crash out on the couch, and next thing I know, I'm asleep. So no, that was about it. But it was a little bit easier to take getting that first win. It's been a while since we went over there and won a game, and so you know, getting off on the right foot was fun for a change.
Yeah, we'll get into the game, but the game, before we get into the nitty gritty, I'll just say it was kind of like a great novel. It was the best of times, and it was certainly the worst of times. One question I had, as I my family and I went over, and nice crowd from Vinton County, nice crowd all around. That the Zane Trace people really do a good job of putting that thing on. I mean, I know with their football success and you know, Coach Coker now taking over the helm for Brian Alley, that it doesn't seem like there's as many games, but they still seem to draw a good crowd, and it's just kind of a tradition over there. But my first question before we get into the stats and all that of the victory was the wardrobe, the attire of the coaching staff. Where did that? I mean, normally I'm used to, you know, a tie or you know, a coach's shirt.
I think we're trying to find ourselves.
Who's the one that's butchering this? Is this NJ Kite?
I started this because I don't want to wear a tie at least as much as what we have in the past.
At least you're honest about it.
Yeah, I'm just being straight. The older I get, the tie thing's starting to bother me. So now, you know, the rest of my coaches, you got to understand, are a little on the back in the when I was in high school, we used to call them preps. You know what I mean? A little on the preppy side. They like to dress nice. You know, you think about it. I mean, you
kind of
got
NJ Kite. He's a little metrosexual.
I mean, Chris Neal. I mean, he's all for some style. You know,
Pop's all about preppiness.
Well, he is.
And so is Coach Yates. Yes.
So you know, they're a little lost right now because we're not wearing ties all the time, and so they thought it would be a good look to go with the, you know, with the khakis and the Nike polo and.
Let's talk about the shoot. So this was not an individual effort on your behalf. It was a entire coaching staff effort to how are we going to do this to appease you and your desire to not have a tie yet still you make the other assistant 40 coaches that you have on your staff happy.
Now, I want you to think about something.
Okay.
Do you know me before a game. Where on the list of priorities do you think I put what we're wearing?
Non-existent.
So that ought to answer
non-freaking existent.
Right there. I don't make those choices.
You could show up and, gosh, a pair of sweats and a
whatever
wife
I had
beater.
On.
It's
well, no one wants to see that.
Man, that's true. But, yeah, it's one thing. Before a game, you're yeah, you're still out in La La Land. But anyhow, I wanted to take my shots. Was an interesting look. And I, you know, just very interesting. Kind of like a bunch of male, middle-aged league bowlers. But at least you matched. Okay. Anyhow, let's talk about the Vikings' first game of the regular season. As you put very well, your history over Zane Trace and the Tip-Off Classic has not been one that's been real stellar over recent years, as you typically seem to get a tough team. And I know you don't really mind that. You kind of like the competition, but you kind of come up on the short end of the stick. But this year you come out with a 60-53 victory over the Washington Courthouse Blue Lions, and that's all fine and well, but I don't know, about 2 minutes into the first quarter Saturday night, I looked at my wife and a bunch of people around me. I'm like, whoa, this isn't the way we kind of saw things getting off.
Right.
You guys are down 22-11 after one quarter.
Right.
And as I looked over at you, I mean, there were several times you'd look down at your assistants to kind of put your hands up in the air like, I don't know what to do. Nothing was working.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that we reacted that way. Our kids, we came out a little bit tight, nervous, I guess, maybe. And I think that's probably what surprised me the most. I mean, I know Courthouse is a very good team, and they're going to win a lot of basketball games. And so the fact that they were playing well didn't really shock me by any stretch of the imagination. I just couldn't believe some of the things we were doing as a group. And I don't know whether, like I said, it was just nerves, tightness, whatever. But basically, we, you know, in the second quarter, we started to get our feet underneath us. We made a couple adjustments defensively. The kids did a nice job, you know, executing those, doing some different things. And then we were able to slowly chip away and kind of work ourselves back into it. I think we got it to 3 at halftime.
Right.
And I think that was big just from the standpoint of the kids being able to go in, sit down, and think, okay, things have went awfully bad at times, and here we are in a 3-point game, so we've got a shot to do this.
Well, and as far as scoring, like you said, in the second period, you outscored Washington Courthouse 17-9. You go into the locker room with a 3-point deficit, which just in and of itself, for anyone who wasn't at the game, give Washington Courthouse credit. They're going to win some games this year.
They're really
well coached, very disciplined. I thought that they, that's a team that I don't even know what they're, I don't have their stats in front of me, but they didn't shoot the ball that poorly at all.
Right.
Not just from beyond the arc, but, you know, they just work very well, and to come back and kind of, you just kind of seem to gnaw your way back into it.
Right.
And then in the third quarter, they come out, and it's a third quarter was a very defensive oriented quarter, I thought. Is you know, you got outscored 11-8 in the third quarter. They actually extended their lead, and then in the fourth quarter, you just blew them out 24-11 to come away with the 7-point victory, 60-53. But what was said at halftime? I mean, what was the, was there one theme? I mean, there was a lot of things I saw on film and at the game that weren't really, in my opinion, up to par. What was the halftime speech like?
Well, the main part of it was, you know, look, catch your breath here. Let's settle down. And then, you know, from an adjustment standpoint, we basically just talked about how if we were going to win the game, we were going to have to win it half-court defense. I mean, that was going to be the key to the whole thing because, you know, a lot of times when you get down in a game or you're trying to make a comeback, you like to extend the floor a little bit, you know, press a little bit, see if you can't cause some turnovers. Courthouse is just an awfully difficult team to do that against. They've got good guard play. Like you said, they're very well coached. Coach Bartram does a nice job. He's going to have his kids in spaced out properly. You're going to have a hard time pressing them. So I knew at halftime, and that's why I was trying to tell my kids, that we were going to have to just play half-court defense and earn it the old-fashioned way, you know.
Yeah.
And I told him, because of that, you're not going to do it all at once. You're not going to go out and go on a 12-0 run necessarily. You know, it's going to take some time, but you just sort of have to hang in there and hang in there and hang in there. And then we were fortunate enough, like you say, in the fourth quarter to cause a couple turnovers and go on a run.
You kind of, there probably, what, 3 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. You had about, I don't know, 4 or 5 series where either ended up in a foul, Washington Courthouse foul, or some nice steals and breakaways and,
right,
and things like that that kind of took over the game. And then another thing I think you got to be kind of proud of is as Washington Courthouse at the end of the game got into a fouling situation and that they had to send you to the line, you guys really stepped up. I thought overall,
right,
for the game, you guys were 13 of 17 for 76% from the line. That's,
we feel like that is a strength of ours this year. And free throw shooting, most coaches will tell you, is sort of a lost art. There's a lot of kids that struggle with it, it seems like nowadays. we feel fortunate that we think we have a pretty good free throw shooting team. You know, everybody has their nights, and I'm sure we'll have some, but we feel confident that if we can get to the line, we're going to benefit from that, which hopefully helps us in end of game situations as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at this year's team versus last year's team, I could very easily see, had you had last year's kids and the inexperienced younger kids, I could have seen in that same game they would have just rolled over and gotten beat.
Well, and I think the difference is, too, is a little more depth this year. We were able to – we had some guys that we think are going to be really good players for us just not have real good games. You know, they just didn't have it that night. And we were able to go into our bench, and guys like Caleb Montgomery, guys like Sean Cottle.
Nayla Yates.
Right. And even Tyler Barnett, who happened to start for us the other night. And Tyler will probably start from time to time. We're going to – a lot of that will be based on matchup. I've talked to those kids about that. But those type of kids, those guys that play specific roles for us, like Tyler and like Caleb and like Sean, you know, for them to come in and steady us defensively the way they did on a night where maybe some people that typically play in front of them weren't playing as well, that's big. I mean, that's team basketball. That's what you have to have. I mean, that's why if you have any chance of having a really good season, you don't do it with five guys. I mean, you have to have some bench. You have to have some depth. So,
well, speaking of one person that did light it up Saturday or Friday night, none other than your junior point guard, Tristan Bartow, who comes away with 31 points, and it was a – I don't know, in hindsight, it was kind of a sneaky 31 points, but going back and looking at film, it amazes me, and it's hard not to be a Tristan Bartow fan, knowing what he went through as a child with his health,
right,
and to see him each year get a little stronger, and to think there's one, he just handles the ball and sees the floor so well.
Right.
There's times, I think, from a passing perspective, he almost sees it too well, because a lot of his other teammates, they don't see some of the passes coming. I mean, his imagination is something that just goes and goes. But 31 points, you got to be very pleased with Tristan's play Friday night.
Yeah, it was efficient, too. Like you say, it was I think he only took 17 shots to do that, I believe. And you know, so it was an efficient night. He didn't miss a lot of shots. He got to the free throw line. I think he was perfect from the line.
Yeah, he was 6 of 6 from the line, 11 of 17 from the field.
Yeah.
3 of 5 from beyond the arc. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it was efficient. Like you say, he wasn't a volume scorer where you're just jacking up, you know, 35 shots to get 30 points. That wasn't the way it was. So he did it within our system and within the team way of doing it, and that's, you always enjoy seeing that. And we're going to have different guys on different nights. You know, it wouldn't shock me if one of the nights it's Jordan Albright doing that, or one of the nights Derek Jones. I think we've got different people that can put up numbers. You know, we got posts this year like Chase and Bo and Sean that are going to give us more production than what we've had. So our guys are just going to have to check their ego at the door. We talk about that. It might be your night one night. It may not be your night one night. But ultimately, the idea is to win.
Yeah, and a good way to get off on the right foot as you start out season 1-0. Your next game coming up Friday, December the 5th, as you host the Jackson Ironman. Our guest this week, none other than Jackson Times sports editor Paul Boggs. He'll join us to talk about that. But before we get him in here, one other question, Coach. This early in the season, I'm sure you got lots of stuff to work on. You're really starting to get into the scouting mode and all that. When you have this much time, you know, you don't have a Tuesday game, so you've, of course, school was out yesterday on November the 30th. You're back in school now. You got, you know, on the equivalent of four practices going into a home opener. What would be, if I had three main things you're going to work on this week, what would they be?
We're going to work on... Besides our list of like what we call everydays, which are just sort of your basic skills, we're going to emphasize more half court defense. I think this team still has a long way to go to play that at a championship level. We've got we've just got to take more priority, place higher priority on it, I think is the right way to say it. Our kids have to understand the importance of it. So half court defense is something we're going to work a lot on. I think offensively, you know, we're like everybody else. We need to work on our half-court offense in terms of rhythm and flow. I thought the other night our spacing wasn't good. We weren't able to, you know, especially in the first quarter, I thought our spacing was really bad. We'd try to come off a ball screen or drive the ball, and it was clogged up. And So those are two things that jump to mind. And then I think the third thing at this point in the season that we're really trying to do more of than what we've done in the past is just individual skill work, you know, every single day, you know, just break up our guards and posts, do some individual skill stuff with them, stuff that you might see at a junior high practice, but just basic skill work just to keep getting better. So those are probably the three things.
I don't really know the answer to this question because you know, who works with the bigs, the post players?
I typically try to work with the post. You know, I have a pretty good idea of their skill sets and what we need from them. Coach Albright does a great job. This is really right up his alley, the individual skill work. You know, I could see Jared being a guy. I've told him before he ought to just build a big barn and start, you know, charging people to in the summers to do
just individual.
He's really, really good at it. Yeah. So he kind of takes our guards and they really work just on whatever skill we decide we want to work on that day. But he's excellent, does a great job with them. So, and then Coach Kite, Coach Neal, you know, whoever else is there at that particular moment, sort of just fill in. They either help me or help him or whatever. But it's nice to be able to break them up sometimes and work with a group of, you know, six kids rather than 12 kids. You know?
Right, which that's the one thing I kind of feel like I jinxed a lot of our post players because last week we were talking about, you know, the experience of Chase and Bo and the addition of Sean Cottle and how more post presence. And as it worked out, I was nothing personal intended. We all have good days and bad days. I didn't think against Washington Courthouse really – our bigs, especially in the first quarter, first half, don't really feel like that was their A game. So
no, I think they understand that. And you know, Courthouse had made an obvious point of – Courthouse isn't a big team. They had made a point of, you know, really boxing out, keeping us off the glass. And, you know, I think they were concerned coming in with our size and strength. You know, I think that was one of their concerns.
I think that's something that Coach Barrett
focused a lot on that, which, you know, maybe made it a little more difficult on our bigs. But that's the nice thing about having balance is that hopefully, you know, whatever a team focuses on, we've got something else that we can attack with. So hopefully that's where we continue to get to.
And if none else fails, you got wardrobe.
Yeah, you always got that to fall back on.
Well, apparently this year we got things, you know, is there going to be an entire ensemble every game?
I you're going to have to talk to Carp and NJ. They're the guys.
Seriously?
I think, you know.
Now, Neil, I could see Neil being, you know, he's a professional. He works in the business environment, and he's cute. He's a pretty boy. Yeah, he just is. I mean, he's a good-looking guy. I could see if Coach Neal was heading this whole effort up, you know, it'd be like a Joseph A. Bank.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Do you even know who Joseph A. Bank is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not personally, but I know.
It's right along with Kmart. Yeah. Anyhow, I could see him doing it. When you say Carp and NJ, man.
Yeah, it could be rough, but here's the thing. I really just don't care.
you're there to coach. You're not That's there it. To make friends. You're not there to look good.
You're never going to find me on a runway anytime soon.
Maybe a military cargo plane runway, but not on the fashionable runway. Well, hey, it's things you get on this podcast. You don't get fluff answers. It's not some glossier BS type stuff. You get in the mind.
We're cutting edge. We get to it. We get to the truth.
Yeah. Speaking of which, your wife okay after the interview?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Oh, wow.
I didn't really talk to her. Wow. I saw her at the game. She was chasing Brogan. Imagine that. Little white-haired blonde boy running out. I think there was a firestorm sale on candy or something, but she seemed to enjoy it. So I just didn't know if she got home or you got home that night. And
no, I don't know, walked around with a little bit of a grin on the face like she had accomplished something. So, you know, I've got a long memory, so we'll figure out something down the road.
Don't try. She's way too smart for you to out manipulate. So coming up next, sports editor of the Times Journal in Jackson, the one and only Paul Boggs joins us next to talk about the Jackson Ironmen and all things that are boys basketball in the Southeast District as the Viking Rumble podcast rolls on. Back on the Viking Rumble podcast, presented by McDonald's, MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports go hand in hand. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Well, we got you caught up on game one as the Vikings get off on the right start with a victory over Washington Courthouse. Now time to put that behind us, Coach, and figure out what's going to happen next as you have the Jackson Ironmen coming to your place this Friday night, December the 5th. And no better person to bring in, I guess, besides yourself, would be a longtime sports editor of the Jackson Times-Journal, the one and only Paul Boggs. How you doing, Paul?
Good, Carl. Good to be here.
Well, thanks for taking time out of your schedule. I know that you've spent the majority of your time here in the last several months following the Jackson Ironmen with their impressive, a very impressive run in football with Coach Hall, and now you transition into hot temperatures in the gym and a sore butt from bleachers.
Yeah, it's a very quick turnaround from football down at Jackson into basketball. They actually had their first two games this past weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, postponed because of how long the football season lasted.
Well, Amy, and to that with Jackson, and we kind of want to take advantage of you while you're in here because that's the way we roll out here, right, Coach?
Yes.
I mean, with not only talking about the Jackson Iron, but here in a little bit, we can get kind of cover the whole Southeast District and get your thoughts and opinions. As not only have you seen a lot of these kids in past years, but also a lot of your co-workers and cohorts that follow these people all the time and see what the media thinks of what's going on. But back to Jackson, how many players that played football actually are playing basketball?
I believe there were 8 football players that are on the varsity roster. They're now making the transition into basketball, which is a little over half of Jackson's roster. They had 13 at their media day.
Right.
So, trying to get the football legs out of them, in the basketball legs, and in the basketball shape.
Right.
They needed those first two games to get postponed, and I don't think everybody was on board with postponing those first two games, but here they are 10 days after their regional final football game, playing tonight against River Valley.
Well, and in addition to that, you have a brand new head coach in Max Morrow that comes aboard. Max been in the program with the JV as a JV coach, but still, that's got to be tough. I mean, Matt, I know you've never been in that situation,
right,
that I can remember. That's got to be tough on a coach.
I'd say it's extremely tough. I mean, especially as a new guy, like you say. I mean, Max isn't necessarily new to the program. I mean, he's been there as a coach, so he knows these kids. But first year as a head coach, you're trying to get your stuff kind of established, and to basically play, tonight on a Tuesday, December 1st?
Yes.
After starting practice,
You said 10 days ago?
They basically had 3 full practices before before a scrimmage they had the night before Thanksgiving. That's really been the only 3 practices.
So let's just assume you start practicing about the 22nd or 23rd, or like the 22nd Sunday, 23rd is a Monday, right? Here you are a week and a day later playing a real game. I mean, that's difficult. I think you've seen it in the area with the football. Alexander, got off to a rough start the other night. We know they're going to be a good basketball team.
Right.
But obviously, when you've only had your kids for a short period of time, I saw Zane Trace the other night. Fortunately for them, they played an opponent that they were just better than.
Right.
But I know Coach Coker was fighting the same thing with trying to get these kids, like you say, get the football legs sort of rested a little bit and get into basketball shape. That's a tough deal. So, yeah, I mean, Max being a new coach, too, that it's an uphill battle for him, I'm sure. And they had 4 games scheduled. I noticed they had 4 games scheduled in the first week, right? I mean, they had the 2.
You would have been the 4th game.
Right, in a period of – and that's rough in itself in a football school because you can't – it's tough to cancel. It's tough to reschedule 4 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's about a fifth of your season, basically. So to say, hey, let's cancel the entire first week and reschedule 4 games, that's tough.
And given the weather we've had the last couple of years,
especially
late in the season.
Yeah.
So really, it's sort of tied their hands, I think. I think they did the best they could with going ahead and postponing the weekend, getting started tonight. It'll be hard on them. But, at the same time, Max goes about it with a lot of passion, a lot of energy, and I'm sure those kids are going to play really hard. And I know he's got a couple key guys that didn't play football, so they're going to be ready to roll. So, You know, I wouldn't discount them for sure. I think that they may surprise you.
With that being said, talk about the Jackson Ironmen. What they, I know they, you know, they lost a couple season seniors last year.
Yeah, they graduated their top two scorers, Casey Walker and Chandler Jenkins. Both were all district Division II honorable mention selections by the AP last year.
Right.
They do return some size with Dakota Nichols, who's one of their football players.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these kids, though, are junior varsity move-ups, which mm-hmm. which Max has coached the last few years. And Max is very familiar with most of all of these kids for the last few years. So that transition part is not going to be a problem, I think. But just, like I said, Johnny Farley, football player. Blake McCoy, who has a broken thumb right now, is out for a while, football player. There's going to be Carson Spahn, who's strictly basketball. They have a good freshman that they're high on, Cooper Donaldson, 6'1" guard, probably be the point guard.
Mm-hmm. You writing all this down, Coach?
Yeah, he's giving him a scouting.
Record this.
Oh, okay. Giving him a scouting report as we go.
That'll give you an excuse to actually listen to us. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
But yeah, Max has had a lot of these kids in the program, is familiar with them, and that part of the transition I don't think will be that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they lost a lot of scoring, lost a lot of rebounding, and they're going to be kind of a team that's in trying to get their football legs out, get their basketball legs in them. You know, what defense they want to run, what offense they want to run. This seems to me more of a slowdown type of offense, I would say, just given the loss of scoring. And they're right. They're still fundamentally trying to do a lot of the things that you know, a lot of teams are well established by now. They won three games last year. One was against Gay Academy in overtime, and they beat Wellston once. And just trying to establish themselves, and Max will do that. I think we'll change the culture there eventually, not just being a football school only, just trying to improve on the basketball side as well.
You've seen this in your career, but you've been doing this, 20 years, 20 plus years?
Close to it.
When you have a school that has an earmark of a basketball school, football school, and you're constantly the sport that's not as prevalent, what kind of dynamics do you see as being critical into being to get the weaker of the two programs, get some parity there where, you know, is it something that can – I know Wheelersburg is a good example. They have had very successful football teams as well as
– Basketball and baseball.
And baseball. Baseball, yes. They're very tough in. What do you see Jackson going about that? I know Max, we talked about this last week, Coach Combs and I. From a standpoint, he bleeds Ironman red. He's a hometown boy. He's mm-hmm. been in the program. A very passionate guy, someone who I don't think will be outworked in any shape or form. What do you see being the key to getting that program, and no disrespect intended, into a winning environment?
Well, having a guy like Max in the first place, mm-hmm. who's from Jackson, played at Jackson, you know, bleeds red, like you said.
Right.
They have more athletes now, I think, playing basketball than the past. Basketball has been in the past... You know, and this doesn't help with the constant turnover of coaches that they've had. It seems like every 1 or 2 years they were changing coaches. So you can't establish a culture from the top all the way down. Getting those kids out that normally wouldn't play basketball, now you're starting to get those kids out, I think, a little bit more the last couple of years. Just changing the whole culture, getting your athletes out, and not just treat basketball as something to do between football and baseball, which the Jackson baseball program is very good right now.
Right. That being said, what kind of a little league, bitty league program does Jackson City Schools have? I know Upwards, they have an Upwards
program. They have the Upward program, both that was a flag football and basketball that they
right.
do. They used to have a bitty program, but it wasn't very strong,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what they're trying to get reestablished with that. I think Max will definitely get one stronger if they don't have one already.
Well, Coach, you can speak to that point as far as a little league program and a feeder system, if you will, and the work that Bob Grillo and a countless cast of thousands have done over the years. That's pretty important, I would assume, that when you have that kind of a quote-unquote feeder system, it really does make a difference.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you have to have that youth program, not only to just generate – I think the number one thing a youth program does is generate numbers, generates interest, mm-hmm. and more kids play. And then if it's ran the right way, it also teaches fundamentals and kids get better. And I've been fortunate that that's, you know, the way it's been here. And then when kids come into junior high, They've been playing basketball for a while. They're into it. They're enthusiastic about it. And yeah, it's big. Schools that don't, I've never taken it for granted here, but what I did take for granted was I just figured all schools had some form of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then as I talked to coaches, I would actually find out that some schools just don't have it. We don't really have it.
Which is quite surprising, really.
Yeah, and that kind of shocked me. I knew ours was really good, and I knew what it did for us, but I just assumed everybody had some form or fashion of it. And there's some that just hardly have any at all. So a place like Jackson obviously has every capability of having a great Pee Wee program. I mean, they have facilities that really are second to none, in my opinion, when you have four gymnasiums or whatever right there.
Their field house has three.
Yeah, and then your main. So, I mean, they've got the facility, the physical capability of doing it if they get the people to do it and like you say, keep a coach in place for a while. And I've known Max personally, and obviously consider him, you know, a friend. I like Max real well, and I would like to see him get the opportunity over at least a 4 or 5 year period to see what he can do, because, you know, 5 years would be a long time for a coach to stay at Jackson, based on the last, you know, decade and a half.
Yeah,
you know?
If you go back to Tony Bornhorst, other than him and Dustin Ford, since literally the last 30 years, those two guys have only been the only coaches there, have been there 4 years or more.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Which is amazing.
It'd be great. It'd be great, I think, a guy like Max being home, that's where he wants to be, if it could be a long-term solution. Certainly rooting for him on that end of it.
Okay, well, Coach, we've heard his side of the story. Let's have you talk a little bit about the Ironman and what you look forward to. I know you have part of your coaching staff this evening going down to Jackson to watch the Ironman play River Valley. But just from what you remember from last year, knowing what you and Max have talked about, what kind of game do you anticipate Friday night as you have your first home opener?
Well, that's the thing about these guys right now. I don't know what type of game to anticipate, to be honest with you, because we haven't really seen them. Maybe know a little bit more after tonight. Like you said, Max, having a new coach, he's going to have his own philosophies and how he wants to approach it. So I couldn't tell you, as I sit here today, do they want to play up-tempo? Do they want to slow it down? You know, do they play man? Do they play zone?
Great.
That's early in the year, I guess, sometimes with opponents. You don't know as much about them as what you want. So what you do is you focus more on yourself. And I think for us, you know, we know the way we want to play. I think the one thing, whether we're playing Jackson or anybody else, we've talked a lot about is, you know, the last couple of years we've been more of a reactive team, meaning that, you know, we guard you and we try to stop you, but we're not necessarily dictating anything. We're trying to be a little more aggressive this year. We're trying to dictate the tempo we want. We're trying to dictate what you do offensively. Trying just to be a little more aggressive, you know, for just a simple way to put it. Hopefully that's what people see Friday night out of us.
Okay, should be a good one. Triple header Friday night, December the 5th, with the freshman team tipping off at 5 o'clock. Should be a nice environment, as Jackson always, despite their record, always brings a pretty good crowd, and should be a good gate, because I know the AD up at Fenton County is fighting for his job right now, from what I've heard. It's not that I'm trying to dispel any rumors.
Could be true.
Rumors. Yeah. Well, true. It's like we talked about.
That's why I don't laugh.
Yeah, I mean, you got that little grin on your face. But, you know, like we talked about in the first segment, whoever picked out the wardrobe for the Viking coaching staff. But that's just one of many things. Let's talk about the whole Southeast District. As somebody who spends, I know it's your profession, but my gosh, the amount of time you spend in gyms throughout the course of a basketball season, not only with the boys, but also the girls, and then the tournaments, and, you know, as it goes on. Let's just, how should I do this? I know you got your media guy and you're a walking encyclopedia. Yeah. Let's start out with the TVC. I don't want to go through each team. If I had to pick top three teams in the TVC Ohio, who do you like?
Top three teams in TVC Ohio I like this year. I like the Vikings. I like Alexander. I think Alexander, in a similar situation to Jackson, had a little bit longer football season.
Right.
Once they'll get established. I know that Marietta had a big win over them on Saturday, but I think Alexander will get itself established.
I think they have some guard problems right now, but once those things get work themselves out. Yeah. You know, Jim Kearns is going to do that. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're just about a month behind. Yeah.
And I would still, I mean, I know Athens graduated a lot with the loss of the Lerman twins, the loss with Joey Burrow graduated.
Don't bring that up because Coach.
You got Griffin Lutz back. Zakiya Saltzman is coming back this year to play. I would definitely put Athens in my top three still.
Yeah. But I agree, and I was actually kind of, you know, with Lutz, I thought was the only one, and then I hear Zakiya Saltzman coming out, and
he would have really helped him last year.
Oh gosh, yes, he would have been. Yeah, he would have been the fifth plug, so to speak. And of course, Coach Combs had to go through therapy when Joe Burrow and the Lerman twins graduated last week because he just absolutely had an emphatic affection for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, had a lot of fun playing.
I didn't want to leak that out, but you know, it's an off-season thing. Right. Okay, let's go TVC Hocking quickly.
TVC Hocking, which I'm not. That
I know familiar. You really don't cover that one.
Yeah, Trimble, I believe, won it last year, has a lot of athletes back. And Howie Caldwell, you know they're going to be very well coached.
Yeah.
Southern is always right up there near the top. Waterford had some good athletes last year, I think, coming back this year. I don't know much about Wahama. I don't know much about Federal Hocking.
I think Fed Hawk's down.
I think Fed Hawk is down a little bit. I know Nelsonville York had a relatively easy win with them in that opener on Friday night. I would probably go with Trimble again. I know another team that has a deep playoff run in football, but when you translate to basketball, they've got athletes who know how to win.
And also very well coached. The SEOAL, are they still in existence? What's the...
There are four full-time teams left in the SEOAL, and this is actually the last year...
Of the
league, because Guy Academy is leaving OVC. For the Ohio Valley Conference after this year, and Guy Academy is actually playing in two leagues, the SCOAL and the Ohio Valley
Conference. Right, which actually we had them on the schedule, and we talked about this last week. Coach,
that's why we can't play. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
SCOAL, who do you like?
Warren is the clear front runner in that. Blaine Maddox always does a nice job over there. They seem to graduate players, but it's a basketball factory and pays the bills over there right now.
Right. And I know their football program was way down, but I actually did talk to Mike Kenninger, i.e. P. Floyd, over at Zane Trace at the Washington Courthouse Fit and Kenny game. And his exact thing, you know, he kind of emulated what you said. Typical Blaine Maddox, well-disciplined. They don't rebuild, they reload, blah, blah, blah. But he kind of said, you know, Warren's, as far as athletes, they're not what they've been in the last 2 to 3 years. They're still going to be okay.
Good. Yes.
What's your thought on Warren Lowe?
I don't know much about him. I know they graduated a couple studs last year.
Michael
one
Hall,
kid that
Hall
was
kid.
Well, yeah, but then the other kid looked like he was, you know, a professional wrestler, man. I mean, that kid was, what was that kid's name?
Blake Kidder?
Yeah, Kidder. He was a man. But anyway, I mean, but what you just said, they just pump him out. You know, he runs a good program. They've got guys on JV waiting their turn, you
right.
know, and they're going to come up and play. So, no, I mean, Warren's going to be good for a long time.
Okay, you got Warren. Who else do you like?
Logan.
Logan, actually, with Coach Kellogg. And a lot of people. Yeah, I know they kind of stumbled a little bit, and they went right into the frying pan, so to speak, opening their season with Coach Matt Hoops and the Union at Sherman's. They took it on the chin. I think it was 70-31 the first game. But, you know, a lot of people are saying Logan's going to be an improved program, but it's going to take a while for Kellogg to kind of really get his
right. They graduated the Kevin Fisher, who was 6'8", averaged 17.4 points, and was Division One. Logan and Chilcothe, the only Division One teams in the Southeast District by the Associated Press. He was first team last year. Returns second teamer Lane Little, the quarterback on the football team, very good athlete.
Yeah.
But Logan, I expect once they get Coach Kellogg's system established, I think by the end of the year will be a threat to everybody in this in the Southeast District.
And then you have obviously Jackson and Galapagos, you know, in the tail back of that. SOC2, tough conference. I really respect, but would you go Valley, Menford?
Valley and Menford right at the top. And I know Wheelersburg's getting a very late start again because of football going all the way to the state semifinals. But they will be a major player in that league as well. I look for Waverly, who returns everybody, to be challenged as well. But right now, Valley, Menford, right at the top, with the Rolf kid from Valley is back this year.
Which we scrimmaged them over the summer up here at our place.
Very good player.
Very athletic group of kids.
Brandon Rowe from Menford returns back for his senior year. He was first team Division II Associated Press All-District last year. Menford won the league last year, I believe,
by a game over Valley.
So look for those two right at the top. And again, I thought Wheelersburg, once they get their football legs out of and basketball legs under them, we'll be right there as well.
Okay, well, so I says, Paul. So I notice you haven't brought up the Oaks.
The Oaks, well, I had a chance to see the Oaks in the season opener on Friday night. They played Pike Eastern, had a 28-19 lead.
Leading right, going into the fourth quarter by what, eight?
There was only a three-point lead going into the fourth quarter. Just really struggled in shooting the ball, was 7 of 30 from three-point range for the game, 2 of 16 in the second half. And just had a lot of good looks at the basket from three-point range, just couldn't make anything.
Which, and you know, with a Norm Pearson team, normally the offense doesn't run through shooting threes. It runs through layups. That's kind of his whole old-school, you know, pass.
He even
pass,
said that pass. After the game. Yeah. We didn't do a very good job of getting the ball down to a 6'5", Dennis Fleming, very well at all.
And as you know, one of my good friends and coworkers, J.J. Hales, exposed himself to all kinds of embarrassment and cruelty by being on Norm's bench for the past 6 years. And he said, you know, it's going to be a challenge this year. And, of course, you know, Norm's never optimistic about anything. Even
right. But I can still see the Oaks finishing, you know, fourth, fifth, maybe make, you know, surprising Waverly or somebody in the top half of that conference. You never know. Catch them on an off night. I really think this Oak Hill team, once they get established, can win 12 or 13 games, maybe 14. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Eastern, I think most people feel, is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, they're undersized. They don't have much height. And this is Coach Barrick's first year, but you know Coach Barrick's going to do a very good job at Eastern. Right.
But, I mean, for them to go, was I don't know if that was on the road or at Oak Hill.
It was at Oak Hill.
Yeah, but for them to have that lead, you know, late, says they must have done something right. But like you said, it's tough to win when you shoot the ball. We've been there before, I guarantee you.
And the shots that Eastern missed in the first half, they started to make in the second half.
Okay, so while we're just right on that same line of conversation, the SOC won. You've got Eastern there. I know you really don't directly cover the SOC one. I'm sure you get to cover several games throughout the year with the Oaks playing non-league or, you know, Wellston and whatnot playing teams like that. Who do you like besides Eastern and the SOC one?
Portsmouth, Notre Dame, Portsmouth, Clay are in that league. Eastern is probably still one of the top teams in that.
I've heard good things about Clay. I don't know much about that league.
Yeah, JJ said Clay's going to be tough.
Yeah, Clay should be. I've heard a lot of good things about Clay in the offseason.
Okay. I don't know what leagues really, I mean, other than really getting out of your...
Yeah, in the SVC, we have a lot of teams that Benton County plays a lot of the SVC teams. Right. Jackson plays SVC teams. So does Wellston.
The main reason we play SVC teams, Paul, it's close to Coach Combs' house.
That saves him a long trip back.
Yeah, he basically lines it up so one of the assistant coaches rides the bus, and he can be laying on the couch 20-30 minutes after
the game
at the buzzer. Yeah.
Oh.
You want to argue with me?
If I my goal is to completely get away from riding the bus, but I can't figure out a way to do it yet.
I may have to dip into my own personal account, hire
somebody to ride the bus for me.
It's because of that luxurious ride that you have personally that it's just such a cultural step to get on a bus when you've been riding in the luxury of a 2001 Nissan. What's the model of that thing?
Altima.
Yeah, it is an Altima. It's the Altima.
I ran into a former player of mine the other day. People remember Matt Everts played here. He ended up going to Wellston at the end of his – but I run into him at Walmart, and he said, still driving the old – he goes, no, it's a new one. And I was like – oh, yeah, it's a better version of the 2001 Altima. So he was giving me some grief in the parking lot at Walmart. But
yeah, I think last week when we interviewed your wife. By the way, did you actually
I haven't listened to that yet.
Okay. Well, I was on my way over to visit with someone at halftime at your game Saturday night, and she I know you'll find it hard to believe Brogan was running around and she was chasing him and she just kind of poked me on the shoulder. I said, thanks. And she just grinned real big. She said, oh, that was fun anytime. But no, I mean, you know, Coach doesn't like to ride the bus, but we do appreciate you coming in. Maybe get you back on right before the tournament so you can kind of give us your insight, because I know what normally, I mean, I know your predominant school of coverage is Jackson Ironman. Do you also, are you solely responsible for covering Oak Hill sports as well as Wellston?
Yep, the three Jackson County schools is our primary coverage area.
No criticism is intended, but the Jackson Times Journal, they really do not cover Vinton County on a regular basis.
Not regularly, no. Vinton County is kind of in a unique place, kind of in a triangle between Chillicothe, Jackson, and Athens, and basically really their coverage is shared by my, you know, Jackson and Athens. Athens probably predominantly more than Jackson.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll see.
Full disclosure.
But perfectly understand. Yeah. I'm sure we'll see you Friday night as the Vinton County Vikings host the Jackson Ironman. And, Coach, I'm sure we're very much looking forward to seeing you and your coach's staff's attire.
Yeah. You're going to have to wait to see this year.
I know. People have said I'm in the inner circle, but I don't know about the wardrobe thing. I don't know where that came from.
I mean, we haven't went as far to wear the bowling shirts that Coach Pearson used to bust out.
Don't fool yourself. The get-up you had over at Zane Trace, I think the text I sent you Saturday night, because normally I try to be, you know, good game, you know, real, but I think it was something to the effect of, were you guys trying to make a fashion statement, or were you going to head down to Shawnee Lanes and bowl a few frames?
Hey, Coach Karp's responsible for the tennis shoe thing. He thinks it's a great look. You're telling me it's not.
Well, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not exactly a fashion expert, but they kind of, how should I put this? The little gray fuzzy suede tennis shoes on grown men with...
I think people get it.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. I don't need to go any further. Paul, thanks for stopping in and seeing us. We'll keep in touch with you throughout the year. And Coach Combs, good luck Friday night and good luck with that wardrobe.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you next time on the Viking Roundball Podcast.
You've been listening to the McDonald's Viking Roundball Podcast, presented by McDonald's of Jackson, Wellston, Oak Hill, and now proudly in MacArthur. McDonald's and Viking basketball. I'm loving it. Join us next week for an inside look at Vikings hoops with the head coach of the Vikings, Matt Combs, and your host, Carl Knox, right here on the McDonald's Viking Roundball Podcast.